Vanchikapaturubhyascha Kripasindhu Vaivasha Pratitaram Bhavevyo Vaishnavevyo Namah. We're hearing the prayers or the song sung by Lord Shiva to the Prachetas. These prayers are actually in glorification of the Lord, of the Supreme Lord. In the beginning of the prayers, Lord Shiva, who was explaining these to the Prachetas, who was a group of 10 brothers who have gone to a secluded place to perform austerities, to prepare themselves for some very responsible work. So, in their performance of austerities, Lord Shiva kindly came to them, or prior to their performance of austerities, Lord Shiva kindly came to them and told them how or in what way to perform their austerities, their penances. And how is that? By chanting this specific prayer. So in the beginning of the prayers, Lord Shiva describes the Lord and how powerful He is. Because as soon as we have an understanding of the potency of God, we understand more clearly who we are and what our relationship is with Him. Because we are tiny, we are insignificant. And He is powerful by definition. God, one name of God is Asama Uddha, which means Asama, no one is equal to Him, and Uddha. Uddha means no one is greater than Him. No matter how powerful one is, or whatever opulence or wondrous things one can do in this world, there's always someone who is at least equal to him or will be better than him in time. No one can say, I am the wealthiest, because there's always someone who will be somewhat wealthier than him, or the most beautiful, or the most famous person, or the fastest runner. No, there's always someone faster or greater or equal. But the definition or our definition of God is He who has no equal. So when we understand something about what the concept of God means, what it means that it's God, then we understand that we are tiny and insignificant, and we understand our relationship with Him, which is of service. Loving service, not just service, but loving service. So, Lord Shiva described the beautiful person who is that Supreme Lord. Because when, generally, when we think of an all-powerful person who is not only omnipotent, but also omnipresent. He is not only all-powerful, but He is present everywhere. Naturally, we think that if He is everywhere, He cannot be a person, He cannot have a form. But this is a material way of calculating that God, what God is. Because not only can He be everywhere through His energies, but also He has a specific and very wonderful, beautiful, all-attractive form. So Lord Shiva describes the form of the Lord. And then He describes how that Lord, through His energy, is present everywhere, and every element of the material existence rests upon His power. Every element, from the air to the gross matter, everything rests upon Him. And he concludes what we were up to just a little bit before that point, actually. He said the way to relate to the Supreme Person is through devotion and service. And how does one get devotion and service? Through those who are already devoted to the Lord. What's going on in there? Do you know? No. What? Banging nails. Something. So now Lord Shiva continues. And actually it's very interesting in the last, so keep the last verses, we'll just read the one before we're starting on today. He said he explains how everyone that the Lord is so powerful, and not only is he powerful, possibly for the living entity the greatest and most obvious exhibition of his power is through the time factor. How the time factor in this world is unstoppable. It crushes quickly or slowly everything in material existence. So although we cannot directly perceive God in this world, we do not have the spiritual vision to directly perceive Him. But we can indirectly, more or less intuit or postulate His presence. How? Because who is it? How could something be imposed in this world that is so powerful and unstoppable? The laws of nature, especially this time factor, is so powerful that although no one likes it, no one or everyone is helpless to do anything about that. It is unstoppable. So that law is being imposed without any exception upon everyone. So that implies that there is an imposer. If something is being imposed, that means someone is imposing it upon us. So indirectly, we can intuit that there is a supreme controller there. So Lord Shiva, being in charge of destruction in the world, he's pointing to this, the position of the Lord as the one who has the potency known as time or the time factor. This is actually an energy of the Lord. And then what do people do knowing that time is there? Usually what do people do despite their wristwatches? They try to avoid the inevitable. And rather than trying to understand what is this unstoppable force in the world, the 66th verse says, "My dear Lord," Lord Shiva says, "all living entities within this material world are mad after planning for things." Everyone, planning and planning and planning and goal making and this and that and planning for their, in their youth, they're planning for their married life. And in their married life, they're planning for their children's growing up in their own old age, and in their old age, when they start getting old, people prepare for their planning for their retirement. But how many people are planning for the inevitable effect of time? Usually, what is motivating this planning is not intelligence, but as Lord Shiva says, they're so busy with a desire to do this or that. This is due to uncontrollable greed. The greed for material enjoyment is always existing in the living entity. It doesn't make any sense. It's a bad path to follow, the path of material greed. But that's another force that impels everyone. Because everyone knows that no matter what I have, no matter what anyone has, it doesn't bring true satisfaction to the heart. But yet everyone is so greedy. So this is uncontrollable greed. Uncontrollable means Even though we know better, we are still controlled by it. Our intelligence is not strong enough, practically speaking, to prohibit greed from taking over our lives. So the greed for material enjoyment is always existing in the living entity. But your lordship, what Shiva says, is always alert. So the living entities are greedy, but the Lord is always alert. And in due course of time, Shiva says, you strike him just as a snake seizes a mouse and very easily swallows him by the force of time. No one survives this. It's very, very, this is cruel material reality. Now, we'll read the three verses that we'll read now, 67, 68, and 69, and then we'll read some of Prabhupada's explanations. My dear Lord, any learned person knows that unless he worships you, his entire life is spoiled. Why is it spoiled? Because if we give our life just for the temporary, and then we die just having gain, something that we lose at the time of death, what is the actual gain left behind? So life is spoiled. Well, human life is actually meant for something far more sublime than that. Human life is meant for dholava manusha janma tarappa dhruva martidam, gaining something on the eternal level, acquiring into eternal existence, asking the questions such as, why am I suffering? Who am I? Kami. So knowing this, how could he give up worshipping your lotus feet, someone who is truly wise? Even our father and spiritual master, Lord Brahma, unhesitatingly worshipped you, and the 14 Manus followed in his footsteps. My dear Lord, all actually learned persons know you as the supreme Brahman, the supreme greatest, the source of everything, and the supersoul who is within everyone's heart. That is what a learned person actually knows. A learned person doesn't know, the mark of his being learned isn't how to put together the pieces of a car or a computer. No, that's just technology. And Prabhupada compares that to blacksmith work. It's just some craft or skill, but it is not true learning. True learning, true knowledge means to know the difference between the living force, the soul, and the body, which it fills with consciousness. The soul fills with consciousness. To know that difference is actually called learning. Although the entire universe is afraid of Lord Rudra, who ultimately annihilates everything, for the learned devotees, you are the fearless destination of all. So the time factor is under Lord Shiva, who is speaking these prayers. And yet the devotees, no one but the devotees, escape the crushing force and devastating force of time. And how does a devotee escape that? Because he doesn't identify with matter, either his body or his house, any more than he'd identify with his shawl, his chadar. Because he knows these extensions of myself, this is mine, it's an extension of me, and I become attached to it, and when it gets a hole in it, I feel bad, just like when I nick my finger or something, I feel bad. But it's not me. So this misidentification, this placing of the identity of my own identity upon material things is such a doomed way to go, because they're all temporary. And it's just a matter of time before they are crushed. So the devotee, an actual pure soul, he doesn't identify with matter. He doesn't place his sense of identity on those things which are not him. He keeps his sense of identity centered on who he actually is. And who is he? He is Krishna's servant. He knows that. He's eternal. He perceives that. He knows, lives in his relationship with Krishna. He tastes the sweetness of that. And therefore he is enwrapped in that and doesn't place his consciousness like an ordinary person in the material world. So therefore, because he lives on the eternal platform, he is free from the crushing of material nature impelled by time. So the Lord is the fearless destination for the learned devotees. You are the fearless destination of all of them. And here, my dear sons of the king, Lord Shiva says to the Prachetas, just execute your occupational duty as kings, because they were meant to become kings. They were sons of kings, and they were meant to become kings. Execute that occupational duty, your duty, whatever it is, don't become a renunciant. Don't give up your duty. And thinking a religious person has to give up the world. No, do your duty, but execute it as a king, but with a pure heart. That means, what does a pure heart mean? It means that the consciousness, the citta, is pure, free from any impurities. That means living in his true identity in relationship with Krishna. Jivera Surupai Krishna Nityadas. And not mistaking his identity for the things composed of matter and placing. Because we all have that sense of I. Everyone has that feeling of I. Everyone has that feeling of I. And because we have that feeling of I, we also have a feeling of mine. Because mine means those things possessed by the I. So that sense of mine really expands. First it begins with this, the body. And then, naturally, everything connected to the body. The first things connected to the body are mom and dad, sisters, brothers, grandparents, children, etc. Then all the clothing. And whatever we think is required, we can get our hands on, we try to place it within the circle of mind. And people are judged as successful in this world by how much they can accumulate as mine, my bank balance especially. Because with my bank balance, I can get my car and my house and my land and what else? Excuse me? Gold? Yes, we can get my gold and what else? I think of my stereo set, which happens to be broken, by the way. What else? My dog. Yeah, soon as, there's so many dogs running through the street. But if that one has a collar around that I put there, he becomes my dog. And then then we feel immediately responsible for him. My dog. My beloved dog. In fact. But actually these things will all have to be left behind. So the person in pure consciousness, although he may deal with a dog and a cat and a house and his parents and even the kingship and his body and his clothes, certainly we must all deal with these things. But he doesn't impress that concept of mine upon them. That's the difference. When he thinks of what is his, what does he think of?
What he's looking after.
But when he thinks of a pure person, a pure devotee, when he thinks of what is his
relationship.
Yeah. He thinks of Krishna as his actually. So very intimate. So, my dear sons of the king, Vasudeva says, just execute your occupation or duty as kings with a pure heart. Just chant this prayer, fixing your mind on the lotus feet of the Lord, and you as a servant. That will bring you all good fortune, for the Lord will be very much pleased with you. So that hints at what is the cause of good fortune. It's somehow or another acting in such a way that the pleasure of the Lord rains down upon us. So we'll read some of Prabhupada's purports. First to 67. Any learned person knows that unless he worships you, his entire life is spoiled. Knowing this, how could he give up worshipping your lotus feet? Prabhupada's purport. The word pandita means a wise man. Who is actually a wise man? The wise man is described in the Bhagavad Gita in this way. Muhunam janamamante janamamam prapadyante vasudeva savamiti samahatma sadulava. After many, many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, Krishna, knowing me, Krishna, to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Thus, when the wise man actually becomes wise after many births and whimsical attempts at self-realization, he surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Such a Mahatma or learned person knows that Krishna, Vasudeva, is everything, Vasudeva Savamiti. Learned persons always think that life is wasted unless they worship Lord Krishna or become his devotee, and a little further in the purport. In this age, the time period in which we live, human beings only live for 60 or 80 years, and even this small lifespan is gradually decreasing. Therefore, it is even more imperative for human beings to take to the worship of the lotus feet of the Lord by constantly chanting the Hare Krishna mantra as recommended by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srinada Bhisan Chena Tarori Tarodiva Sahistuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. When one is engaged in devotional service, he is often surrounded by envious people, and often many enemies come to try to defeat him or stop him. This is not new in this present age, for even in the days of yore, Prahlad Maharaj, who was engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, was harassed by his demoniac father, Hiranyakashipu. The atheists are always prepared to harass a devotee. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu suggested that one be very tolerant of these people. Nonetheless, one has to continue chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and preaching the chanting of this mantra, because such preaching and chanting constitute the perfection of life. One should chant and preach about the urgency of making this life perfect in all respects. One should thus engage in the devotional service of the Lord and follow in the footsteps of previous acharyas, teachers, beginning with Lord Brahma and others. And that will save one from the greatest of fears. And the purport 269 by Srila Prabhupada. The verse said that execute your occupation or duty as a king, but with a pure heart, and chant this prayer, fixing your mind on the lotus feet of the Lord, and that will bring all good fortune, for the Lord will be pleased with you. Purport. The prayers offered by Lord Shiva are very authoritative and significant. Simply by offering prayers to the Supreme Lord, one can become perfect, even though engaged in his occupational duty. The real purpose of life is to become a devotee of the Lord. It does not matter where one is situated, whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, an American, an Englishman, an Indian, etc. One can execute devotional service anywhere and everywhere in the material existence simply by offering prayers unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Hare Krishna Mantra is also a prayer, for a prayer addresses the Supreme Personality of Godhead by His name and invokes His good fortune by petitioning the Lord to allow one to engage in His devotional service. The Hare Krishna Mantra also says, "My dear Lord Krishna, my dear Lord Ram, O energy of the Lord Hare, kindly engage me in your service." Although one may be situated in a lowly position, he can execute devotional service under any circumstances, as stated, ahaitukiya patiyata. Devotional service cannot be checked by any material condition. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also recommended this process. Gyane prayasam udapastanamante eva jivanti san mukharitam bhavadiya vartan stanaistita shutigatam tanovan manobir ye priyaso jito jito kasitas trilokyam. One may remain situated in his own place or in his own occupational duty and still lend his ear to receive the message of the Lord from realized souls. The Krishna consciousness movement is based on this principle. That happened last time too. That was like an alarm clock in some ways. The Krishna consciousness movement is based on this principle, the alarm clock principle. That we should wake up to who we actually are and what life is. It's based on this principle, and Prabhupada explains, we are opening centers all over the world to give everyone a chance to hear the message of Lord Krishna in order to go back home, back to Godhead. Okay. Text 70, which is really the conclusion of this section. Therefore, O sons of the King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is situated in everyone's heart. He is also within your hearts. Therefore, chant the glories of the Lord and always meditate upon Him continuously. The word asakrit is significant, for it means not just for a few minutes we should meditate or chant the glories of the Lord, but continuously. This is actually the perfection of Krishna consciousness, the perfection of life. When our relationship with Krishna is so spontaneous and deeply developed, and we have such a taste for being with Him, that we always have our mind focused upon Him. This consciousness is very, very difficult to attain. But this is actually the natural consciousness of a living entity. Just like when someone is in love, it's not that he has to force himself to think about his beloved. It's just so natural. His mind wanders there 10, 20, 100, 200, 1,000 times each day. His mind wanders to the one he loves. I wonder what he's doing. I wonder what this is happening. I wonder what this. It's just natural. It's the natural consciousness of love. So similarly, the natural consciousness of each and every one of us, the soul's consciousness, when it's not identifying with the body, is loving Krishna. So naturally, when one is pure, one chants always the names of Krishna, thinks always of Krishna. So that is the instruction given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikasta, Ketanya Sadhari. The holy name of the Lord should be chanted 24 hours daily. Therefore, in this Krishna consciousness movement, we request the devotees to chant at least 16 rounds on their beads daily. Actually, one has to chant 24 hours daily, just like Haridas Thakur, who was chanting the Hare Krishna mantra 300,000 times daily. That's 180 rounds or so a day. And that's basically, it's 24 hours a day. Indeed, he had no other business. He all day long would just chant, and he was experiencing Krishna through his names. Sasri, you have been to Benapo? Nice place? Sweet? That's where Haridas used to sit under the... What kind of a vine was that? Wasn't a tree. There was a tamal tree, but there was a very, very old vine. It was a malati, right? Madhavi or malati? What is a Madhavi vine?
A kind of vine.
Yep, I know what a malati is, a jasmine. Different. You know?
No.
So he would sit under this vine that's still existing, very big and old and wraps around everything. And he would just chant and chant and experience Krishna through his name, because Abhinatam Namanamano. He was not bored because he was actually tasting his relationship with Krishna. So indeed, Haridas Thakur had no other business. Some of the Goswamis, like Raghunath Das Goswami, were also chanting very strictly, rigidly, and also offering obeisances very rigidly, bowing down and chanting. As stated in Srinivasacharya's prayers to the six Goswamis, Sankhyapur Vakanam Agananatabhi Kalavasani Pito. The word Sankhyapur Vaka means maintaining a numerical strength. They were counting. Every day they were chanting on their beads and counting a specific number of rounds. Raghunath Das Goswami used to chant 100,000, I think, 64 rounds every day. And he would pay obeisances hundreds of times. There's some prayers of Sanatan Goswami also, that he would every day, and these have been translated fairly recently, that every day, that I can't remember how many prayers there are, there were maybe 300 or so, to different places in Vrindavan and different persons in Vrindavan, associates of Krishna, their prayers to him, and he would recite the prayer and then bow down and recite another prayer and bow down. Bow down in this way, become very, very humble, and with one's full heart be calling to these persons and places to bestow mercy. So not only was Raghunath Das Goswami chanting the holy name of the Lord, but he was also offering obeisances in the same prolific numbers. Because the princes were ready to enter into some severe austerities in order to worship the Lord, Lord Shiva advised them to constantly chant of and meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is significant that Lord Shiva personally offered his prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead just as he was taught by his father, Lord Brahma. Similarly, he was also preaching to the princes according to the parampara system. One not only should practice the instructions received from the spiritual master, but should also distribute this knowledge to one's disciples. So many lessons in there. Lord Shiva continues. So now he will describe the glories of this prayer that he has just recited. My dear princes, in the form of a prayer, I have delineated the yoga system of chanting the holy name. All of you should take this important prayer within your minds and promise to keep it in order to become great sages, because the mind will determine what happens to us. If we allow our mind, there's that verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Jayato Vishyapungsan Sandas Tesho Pajayate, whatever one focuses his mind upon, attachment will develop to that thing. Now, this is the basic principle of advertising. Put a picture up there, put someone beautiful up there, and along with the cigarette or the... Now, do they have, they don't allow advertising of cigarettes anymore? No, I don't think so. But they used to. They used to put the Marlboro man, some guy, a cool-looking guy, rugged looking fellow wearing a big hat and riding a horse in the wild west of America, and everyone would think, and he was the Marlboro man. So attachment would develop to the image, very psychologically perverse, how they manipulated people's minds would continuously with advertising, just to squeeze money out of you. Never mind, it'll kill you smoking the cigarettes or whatever, but to squeeze the money out of you, psychologically manipulating us poor people who are feeling so unhappy in this life, thinking if, you know, I would like to be like this. No one's satisfied being what they are. So I would like to be like the Marlboro man. So I see that picture, and there he is with the cigarette. And I just look at that. It's placed in front of me, my eyes. It's in my consciousness. And I think about it. I see it. And then attachment develops. So every industry spent so much money on advertising for this reason. So that you think about the product, and what we think about, we become attached to it. So therefore, the question, a very important question that we should ask ourselves is, what do we want to think about? And people don't even consider this. We fill our minds with so much trash, rubbish, things that we really don't want to be there. If we had a choice, truly if we had a choice, we'd clear them out, we'd throw them out. Chuck them in the bin. But we fill our consciousness with this. The advertising, the books, the videos, the radios, the televisions, the movies, the this, the that, just constantly pouring things that really don't help us at all into our consciousness. And rather than that, Lord Shiva is instructing, rather than putting these things in our mind that really with our intelligence we should understand that we don't want to develop attachment to these things, no matter what the mind is saying, I want this, I want this, I want that. With our intelligence we should understand that the mind isn't our friend in this regard, and why listen to it? It's acting, practically speaking, as an enemy, telling us to expand our sense of enjoyment into places that will not actually fulfill what they're promising, not really deliver the happiness that the advertisement promises us. So rather than filling our mind with this, my dear princes, Lord Shiva says, in the form of a prayer, I've delineated the yoga system of chanting the holy name, that we fill our mind with Krishna's names, with Krishna. All of you should take this important prayer within your mind. That's why. And promise to keep it. So what happens if we always keep Krishna in the form of his names in our minds? We should find out. See what happens. An order, he says, promise to keep it. These prayers or the holy names, in order to become great sages. That's what will happen. That's what will happen. We will become great sages. Wise, very wise, living truly on the eternal level. That's what a sage is. Mahatmanas tumam parta daivim prakritamashita. Living on the eternal level, on the eternal platform. That is where we belong, because that is who we are, eternal. The soul ourselves is eternal. By acting silently like a great sage and by giving attention and reverence, you should practice this method. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport to this verse. The topmost yogi is he who constantly thinks of Krishna within himself and chants the glories of the Lord. In other words, the system of bhakti yoga has been existing from time immemorial and it is now continuing in this Krishna consciousness movement. The word muni vrata is significant in this regard because those who are interested in advancing in spiritual life must be silent. Silence means talking only of Krishna, Krishna Katha. That is the silence that Maharaj Ambarish speaks about. Savai mana Krishna patara vindaya vachamsi vaikunti gunana vanane. King Ambarish always fixed his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord and talked of him only. We should also take this opportunity in life to become as good as a great saint, simply by not talking unnecessarily with unwanted persons. We should either talk of Krishna or chant Hare Krishna undeviatingly. That is called Muni Vrat, the vow of a sage. The intelligence must be very sharp. Samhita, Samahita, Dhyā. One should always be acting in Krishna consciousness, discriminating. The job of the intelligence is to discriminate. And it directs the mind. So which way should I allow, what should I allow my mind to become attached to? That is the job of the intelligence. So the intelligence should be very sharp, very piercing, and should always be acting in Krishna consciousness. The words etad abhyasattadrita indicate that if one takes these instructions from a spiritual master with great reverence, adrita, and practices them accordingly, he will find this bhakti yoga process to be very, very easy. Now, there's a history of this prayer. This prayer, Lord Shiva did not make it up himself, was first spoken to us by Lord Brahma, the master of all creators. The creators, headed by Bhrigu, were instructed in these prayers because they wanted to create. When all the prachetas were ordered to create by Lord Brahma, we chanted these prayers in praise of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and what was the result? We became completely free from all ignorance. Thus we were able to create different types of living entities. So one will be able to perform whatever his duty is perfectly if one becomes expert in purifying his mind and intelligence by filling his mind fully with Krishna. A devotee of the Lord, of Lord Krishna, whose mind is always absorbed in him. So much of these, the point of this is to absorb the mind in Krishna. Who with great attention and reverence chants this stotra, this prayer, will achieve the greatest perfection of life without delay. The greatest perfection. We can't even imagine what that is, practically speaking. Of course, if we read, we can understand clearly what it is. But what it is, what the experience of true perfection is, practically speaking, impossible for us to imagine in our imperfect consciousness. In this material world, there are different types of achievements, but of all of them, the achievement of knowledge is considered to be the highest, because one can cross the ocean of ignorance, nescience, only on the boat of knowledge. Otherwise, the ocean is impassable. Although rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worshipping Him are very difficult, if one vibrates or simply reads this stotra, this prayer, composed and sung by me, Lord Shiva, he will very easily be able to invoke the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what is difficult will become very easy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the dearmost objective of all auspicious benedictions. A human being who sings this song, sung by me, can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee, being fixed in the Lord's devotional service, can acquire whatever he wants from the Supreme Lord. A devotee who rises early in the morning and with folded hands chants these prayers sung by Lord Shiva and gives facility to others for others to hear them certainly becomes free from all bondage to fruitive activities. My dear sons of the King, the prayers I have recited to you are meant for pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul. I advise you to recite these prayers, which are as effective as great austerities. In this way, when you are mature, your life will be successful, and you will certainly achieve all your desired objectives without fail. So the potency of chanting, taking the instructions of these prayers is very great. So there's actually quite a few of the purports that I had delineated to read. And let me ask if there's any questions or comments. First, and if there's any time, then I'll read a few sections. Any comments or questions? Thank you. Yep.
Prayers, it says we should chant these. Is it sufficient to just chant Hare Krishna, or would it be beneficial to chant these prayers?
Well, these prayers are very nice. You can chant these prayers, but chanting Hare Krishna is sufficient because it's the mahamantra. It's really the essence of all prayers. It's a prayer in that it's a calling for Krishna to engage us in his service, but it's more than just a prayer. It's Krishna's names. And Krishna, prayer has a meaning, and it's the meaning that has potency. It's a calling. But Krishna's name is no different from Krishna, so it inherently, even aside from the meaning, it has potency. And chanting Krishna's names is practically speaking the method of self-realization recommended in the age of Kali for cleansing the heart, etc., and bringing us to the perfectional point. Yes, so it's quite sufficient. Different prayers that are wonderful, and if we have an attraction for them, different verses and prayers, we can learn them. Any other questions or comments? Yep.
It sometimes sort of seems like almost like a trick. The way it says, the Bhagavatam says, to do something that's so difficult to do. And it says, if you just do this, you take these instructions and pray and practice them accordingly, you'll find.
Which purport is that? Which verse and purport?
61.
Okay, why don't we read? Oh, 71, okay. There's another one that talks about easy and difficult. Maybe we can, because I had wanted to read that purport. Well, here, 75 says, in this material world, there are different types of achievements. But of all of them, the achievement of knowledge is considered to be the highest, because one can cross the ocean of nescience only on the boat of knowledge. Otherwise, the ocean is impassable. Although rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worshipping Him are very difficult, if one vibrates or simply reads this stotra, this prayer composed and sung by me, Lord Shiva says, he will very easily be able to invoke the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that here he says, to become a devotee of Lord Krishna and Vasudeva is very, very difficult. Usually he says how easy it is. But here he says it's very, very difficult. That's what the verse says. Because to devote ourselves fully to anything other than our own selfish tendencies is very difficult. You know, we give a little bit and we say, I'm a devotee. But to actually give our heart is very difficult. Very difficult. So how could something that's very difficult become very easy? So he's going to describe that. The word especially used in this connection is durāradhyam. The worship of the demigods is not very difficult, but becoming a devotee of Lord Krishna is not so easy. However, If one adheres to the principles and follows in the footsteps of the higher authorities, as advised by Lord Shiva, one can easily become a devotee of Lord Vasudeva. This is also confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj. Devotional service cannot be practiced by a mental speculator. Devotional service is a special attainment which can be acquired only by a person who has surrendered unto a pure devotee. As confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj, Mahiya Sham Parajo Bhijekam Niskin Sharanam Navanati Avad. Unless one accepts the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee who is free from all material contamination, one cannot enter into the devotional service of the Lord. So the point that's being made here is that although it is very difficult to approach Lord Krishna, if one can give his heart, and therefore how can one give one's heart to someone who we can't approach? This is the point. So, and therefore, how can one truly be a devotee of Krishna? So if one gives one's heart to a pure devotee, then that heart given will be counted as surrender unto Krishna, because that devotee doesn't keep it for himself. He's a servant of Krishna. He just passes it to Krishna, so to speak. So something difficult in that sense becomes easy. Something impossible becomes easy in that sense. Yet, to give one's heart to anyone is not easy. But if Prabhupada just spoke about, oh, it's so difficult, 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 then it would make our path even more difficult. So we need some encouragement too. Did you want to add anything about it, or make a different point?
I guess the skeptical part of my nature was saying, oh, here it is again, saying that it's easy. One just simply must
do something that's difficult.
Something you don't have. If you have that, then it must, it's very, very easy.
But every journey begins with even a long journey begins with a small step. And what we gain, it's like it's like putting a little bit in the bank, and then suddenly you find that you have a whole bunch of money if you put it in regularly. Yeah, are you doing that? Good. So it does, from our perspective now, it looks like that. But then, from the just like when you're young, very, very young, when you're 8 years old, you sort of think, I'm never going to become old. And you look at a person who's 70 years old and all wrinkly and like that, and you think, and it seems so far away, and you practically think you'll never get there. But lo and behold, just by day, imperceptibly, one day, you are there, and you've accumulated all those old those days and months and years, and you are old, even though you thought it would never happen. So, and it sort of happens imperceptibly if you just continue getting older, which is unavoidable. So, if one continuously renders devotional service and avoids and chants Hare Krishna and just sort of simply does it, it seems like one will eventually get there. And then it's, and then when you're 70, it seems like it just happened so quickly. And then it seems very easy. And if, it's like if an eight-year-old said to the old man, how do you become old? And he says, it's very easy. But from the eight-year-old point of view, it's so difficult. But if he's just patient, he won't be able to avoid it. So if we patiently take to the process, that's my guess on it, from what it looks like from the old, the mature perspective. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
I know in text number 68.
Yes. Yeah. The entire universe is afraid of Lord Rudra, and he is Lord Rudra, who ultimately annihilates everything. For the learned devotees, you are the fearless destination of all. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. Lord Shiva is speaking. Rudra himself, Lord Shiva, is speaking of fear of Rudra. This indicates that there are many Rudras, 11 Rudras, and that the Rudra, Lord Shiva, who is offering this prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is different from the other Rudras, although he is as powerful as they are. The conclusion is that one Rudra is afraid of another Rudra because each and every one of them is engaged in the destruction of this cosmic manifestation. Aside, or but for the devotee, everyone is afraid of Rudra, destruction. Even Rudra himself. A devotee is never afraid of Rudra because he is always secure, being protected by the lotus feet of the Lord. So he's anchored in eternity. Is that what you were getting? Yeah. How is Rudra afraid of Rudra? Lord Shiva is afraid of Lord Shiva, it seems. And Prabhupada continues that purport by saying, as Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya Pratijani, Hi Name Bhakta Panashati, my dear Arjuna, you may declare publicly and boldly that my pure devotee will not be vanquished under any circumstance. So even if one is not a pure devotee, what one gains in this life is forever. In spiritual life, spiritually, what one gains is forever his. So, therefore, cultivate spiritual life. Grow spiritually wise and mature, patiently and gracefully, and then at the end of our life, leave all matter behind and fully hold on to the lotus feet of Krishna and allow Krishna to take us to Him. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Lord Shiva Pachetas ki jai. So tomorrow we'll continue next chapter.